guys. So episode two, Adam Kaler and our guests, the Mac Man, Ryan Burke.
Cheers, everyone. Good to be on here with you gentlemen.
All the way down here from what, Kenwood or Blue Ash or something to be with us today? Yeah,
it's a long drive from Cincinnati down to Covington, let me tell you what.
Yeah, well, it depends on which highway you take.
It depends on where you grew up, because sometimes it's just like going across the demilitarized zone for some people from Kentucky.
Yeah, Brian, so we wanted to bring you on the show today. If just as a recap for everybody, I mean, if you heard our pilot podcast episode that we posted last week, you will know that this Side Hustle Cincinnati podcast is all about creating wealth, creating opportunity for yourself, for your family, for people in your community, and, you know, helping the economy in Cincinnati in general and, you know, kind of opening people's minds to different things that they could be doing besides slaving away at a 9-to-5 job.
Remind them what's possible, man. A lot of opportunity out there. Go follow your passion.
A lot of opportunity. And if anybody knows Brian Burke, you know he's got a lot of energy.
I've never been short on energy. I'm bleeding blue right now. So
it might actually be a prerequisite for side hustling. What do you think?
What, the blue suit?
Well, the blue suit has a lot of energy of its own, but maybe when he puts the suit on.
If you don't have energy, there's no way you can, you know, do a normal job and go home and start another company. I mean, it's just not going to work like that. You have to have the passion and the drive to get it done.
Yeah, I think the passion's what brings the energy. Yeah. I think the desire to do something beyond what you've been doing.
You'll push yourself so much further if you have that passion.
Oh, exactly.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so when Brian puts a suit on, it's almost like Black Panther. When he puts a suit on, he gets like all these powers and stuff. So Mac, Apple Man or Mac Man suit on, and all of a sudden it changes the game.
I like Lincoln Hawk from Over the Top. I'm dating myself here, but when Sylvester Stallone, when he says, when I throw my hat like this, I become a machine, like this truck. So when he does his, when he ties his bow tie, it's go time, baby.
It's go time.
Well, I went the self-tie. Bow tie in this one, you know, is super easy.
Nice. So speaking of go time.
Did you guys see Adam's bow tie?
Yeah, I don't have a bow tie. I don't think I even own a bow tie. Actually, I do own a bow tie. I did it for Halloween one year and it's got skulls on it. It's like a skull and crossbones.
Just to clarify, Killer Winery is not his side hustle.
No, it's not. It's the name is rare. So there's an actual Killer Winery in Santa Barbara. And we decided to go there when we were out in L.A. just because it's got my name. So I went out there and acted like I owned the place for a little while. And then I bought a bunch of swag.
And then he brought me no bottles back.
I actually have one bottle. I actually have a bottle. If you – I'm not married to it either. So it's sitting in my office, I believe. No, it's sitting in my house. I will have to bring it to you so you can at least try it.
Oh, wow.
Because I don't drink.
Talk about it. We can't try it on camera then. We'll have to wait till another time.
We'll have to wait for another time. That's right. So, Brian – I think we need to ask you some questions. People out there are probably wondering, how do you build a company like Sell Your Mac? And talk a little bit about what Sell Your Mac is. And then if you want to talk about, you know, what gave you the inspiration to start it? And then how did you find, you know, capital to get it off the ground, et cetera, et cetera?
I'm going to have to go back a lot further in this journey and just to start a Sell Your Mac to really explain what happened. You know, my passion was always for buying and selling things, and that started at a very young age. So I was on the sidewalk when I was 10 years old selling jewelry that I was making by hand. And I did that for a few years, and then I got into Audi car parts. And I was buying, selling car parts from Audi forums back and forth on eBay.
Oh, wow.
And that was kind of the first part of my eBay experience.
I was selling now and laters to people in the neighborhood from
the
Sohio. You remember Sohio, the gas station? I used to walk up Quebec Avenue in Price Hill and get a whole bunch of candy for 5 cents a pop and then take it down. I'd bring my wagon with me, and then I would just buy, like, I don't know, $5 worth of it, and it would be a nickel a piece, and I'd go down and sell it to the kids who couldn't leave the street and sell it to them for a quarter.
I used to have a lemonade stand one time. I was like, not for me.
How did it work out?
Might have broken even. I don't know.
But you failed and you learned from it. So it's good.
Yeah, I learned that I didn't like
it
at that time. Yeah, I needed a stronger kick in the butt than, go down and try to see if I can get some baseball cards out of this.
That's right. I actually had somebody call the cops on me one time for my lemonade stand. I had a kid on my street and his grandma.
Did you spike the lemonade at him?
No. I was a total legit business too. And the cops ended up showing up because this kid, Chris, on my street, he would show up like every weekend. His grandma would have him over, and this kid had everything. He had the Knight Rider big wheel. right? You remember that? How cool that was? Like, if you had, like, I had the red and yellow, like, McDonald's looking big wheel. But if you had the Knight Rider big wheel, that was, like, next level. He had that. Later on, he gets a four-wheeler. He's driving around Price on a four-wheeler, and he's, like, I don't know, 8, 9 years old at the time. I think
I
was 12.
Well, that can't be illegal.
Oh, it doesn't matter. It's Price Hill. And, yeah, but his grandma would give him money, and then he would go and get ice cream when the ice cream truck showed up, and he would throw it in our face. He'd say, oh, look at me. I got, like, four ice creams. And I'd ask my mom, like, hey, Mom, can we get some ice cream? She's like, I don't got money for that shit, right? So I figured, hey, I need to figure out a way to get some money out of this kid. So I did a lemonade stand, and I opened it up. He ended up spending all the, I don't know, $5 or $6 that his grandma gave him for ice cream on my lemonade.
Wow.
So when the ice cream truck came, he wanted money for ice cream, and he told his grandma, here's what happened. Calls the cops on me. They come and they're like, I don't see him doing anything illegal here. So I kept going with my lemonade stand. Made, you know, that was the only day I had my lemonade stand. So
made $5.
Made $5. $5.
Going back to your story about the candy, I think one interesting thing is that you don't have to have your sights on making some enormous amount of money when you're first starting. And that's the wrong way to look at any kind of opportunity like this. You know, you were fine with making, you know, 20 cents. Mm. And you have to start somewhere. So I think people need to understand, you know, try to make $100 before you make $1,000, before you make $10,000, before you make $100,000. Mm. You know, start small and build.
Yeah, back then, 20 cents, though, that was, I was well on my way to a pack of baseball cards.
So when you were doing your Audi parts, what was a good week for you?
A few $100. You know, I got close to flipping a couple cars that I didn't have in inventory. Ultimately, it fell through.
Where were you at? Like, were you in high school? Were you in college when you were
I was in high school at this point.
Oh, okay. So you make a couple $100 on the side without having to work at like Kroger or McDonald's or something like that, like a lot of other kids had to do.
I have worked one time at a pizza place at La Rosa's.
Oh, how'd that go?
Pretty good. Made some good money one summer. You know, you got to have friends come in and, you know, grandparents for tips because, you know, the general people are not giving you great tips at La Rosa's.
No.
Shout out to Buddy La Rosa, West Side guy.
I love La Rosa. I
mean, place your
advertisement here.
Yeah.
So in college, my main side hustle was buying, selling phones. And everyone was too lazy to sell their technology. So I would offer to buy it and sell it for them. You should take about a 35% cut. So I was going around to like sororities and fraternities, just telling them what I did. And it was, you know, very easy pitch. Hey, do you have any used phones in your drawers? I'll buy them on the spot right now, or I'll give you a cut of the proceeds. And usually collect, you know, a handful, you know, while I'm there. And then, you know, people kind of knew me on campus as the phone guy. So I got my start on that. And when I graduated college, it was an interesting time being at Tulane because right when Katrina had hit. And
what did you study in college, by the way?
Management and finance.
Oh, nice.
So I thought I was going to go into finance. But none of these companies came to interview. And I ended up going back home and just starting my eBay business and really kind of leaning into the cell phones. And, you know, just one deal I made the first week I got home from college, I made almost $3,000 selling these 70 Nextel phones. And that told me that it's possible that this can be a real company.
Nice.
So that was exciting.
Can you imagine just walking home like, okay, so Katrina's hit. You have a national disaster. You went to Tulane, which is a great school, but all your connections, nobody's coming down there because of Katrina. Nobody's coming.
They were scared. It was like a military zone.
Yeah. And so you come home and you're like, well, make a lemon. You know, I got lemons, so let's make some lemonade.
Yeah.
And my mom's still pushing me to go get a real job. You know, I was interviewing at like National City Bank and some stuff like that at the time. But that really wasn't where my heart was at. But I never intended to go build this entrepreneur journey. That was not my initial plan, you know, when I was graduating.
Well, your first deal, you made as much as you would have made in a month. Yeah. I'm assuming entry level then there was at that time was probably about 36,000 or so, maybe 40,000.
So it was really good money right off the bat. And fast forward like about 2 or 3 weeks, I made a relationship with one of my friends, Brad Bonds, who worked at a Verizon store at the mall. And quickly, I was able to blast out the information on their intranet at Cellular Sales, like the largest independent Verizon reseller. Now, everyone knew I was the phone buyer. And these people were just hitting me up with this backlog of phones they had collected. At the time, there was virtually no trading platforms. Gazelle was technically around, but it wasn't, you know, integrated with the phone companies. So people would just trade their phone in when they buy another one. And these reps would just have them collected. So I could buy them off them for $5, $10 a piece, you know, sell them for, you know, $40 to $80. and, you know, add some value by including a phone charger, a car charger, a case, you know, warranty, all that kind of stuff. And it was just a really easy transaction to move them from them to the eBay market, where there was a huge opportunity. Because back then, you know, people were buying new phones at Verizon for $180 at a bare minimum, you know, these razors and stuff. So having a used phone for $50-$60 was a game changer.
I love it.
Love it. So now walk us through the next steps you took. Did you, at that point, you said you realized, hey, this is
a legit business. It's a real business. It can happen. But my passion wasn't around the phone. It was really always for Apple. And, you know, right when I started, the iPhone wasn't even out yet. So Apple, I mean, obviously took off a lot when the iPod came out, but it was the iPhone that made it a much bigger market and kind of more opportunity. So right when the iPhone came out, I decided to, you know, pivot and start focusing more on Apple products.
But you were still, you were doing well selling other products, but you saw this opportunity with Apple and you said, I've got to get on this.
Yes. And the phone market was starting to slightly decline. There was, you know, some other players coming in. There was a little bit more buyback happening on the commercial side, you know, with linking up with the carriers. So it was getting a little bit tougher to get, you know, quite the same deals that I was. So I figured might as well focus on my passion. You know, I started buying and selling the Apple equipment. And I was, you know, really happy doing that. And I, you know, knew a lot about it. So I was, you know, staying up till, you know, 4 or 5 a.m. working because I was, my battery was going all night because I was, you know, so happy with my role. Mm. So that was really fun.
What drove you to Apple? What did you like about it?
I liked it all my life, you know, is the simplicity that kind of always worked, the ecosystem, and it was just very trusted. I felt like a lot of the other, you know, software and hardware wasn't as trusted. And that's been one of the number one reasons why I've always focused on Apple.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, you picked the right time because the name went to this, you know, basically from the phone to all of a sudden you could do family share to the cloud to now you can do everything in your house from your phone, your computer, your speakers, everything just.
Yeah. They made a pretty fast transition to unlocking a lot of new product lines. I mean.
Yeah, but at this point, were you fully committed to this or were you still considering full-time work?
I was fully committed. Within the first 3 or 4 months, I was not considering any other full-time work. So,
and this is 3 or 4 months after graduating?
After graduating.
Okay.
So, yeah, I graduated in 2006. I would say, you know, late into the fall of 06, it was completely off the table. I wasn't looking anywhere else. I was just focusing on the business, and I was making good money at the time, just working independently.
What did your parents think about this?
My mom was not thrilled. You know, I think the biggest thing is the investment in college. And I got almost a full scholarship, but still just the thought that I got this degree and I'm, you know, going to be an entrepreneur.
You spent 4 years
doesn't
doing
really
this
make sense and, to yeah. their mind, you know. So my dad's a doctor and, you know, it's like, you know, went on that path, but that, you know, that type of path wasn't for me. So right. I think I fell into the path that ultimately was right.
Talk about that a little bit, because I think there's a lot of people out there who are in that similar situation. They have expectations from their parents or they have a feeling inside of them that working a 9-to-5 job is just not for them, or they're working a 9-to-5 job now and they have something that they really would like to do, but they just can't make that jump.
I think there's a lot of reasons people are scared. I mean, if they're trying to support their family and trying to, you know, make their parents happy with their role, I can definitely see that as an issue. And I think it took years for my parents to fully realize that I had something going that could be my lifelong journey.
Wow.
I mean, that's kind of, I spent, I don't know how much money at Hanover, liberal arts private school in Indiana. And when I came back from Mexico, my mom and dad, I told her I was going to start working at Total Quality Logistics. My mom and dad were kind of like, but you don't need a college degree to work there. I was like, yeah, but do you know what they can make it? You can earn from commissions. So it's better than anything I heard at these other entry-level sales jobs. And these guys are, I mean, you go in there and it's just nothing. You talk about energy. It's nothing but
hype.
Phone, you know, like it was like when we were at the very first building and it was walking in, it was like boiler room. It was just so loud.
Wow.
And it was just like, all right, yeah, now you, it's go you like time that. As soon as you walked in. Yeah.
Yeah.
You had to, or you
fall out.
Yeah.
One of the best speeches ever, right? Boiler room.
Yeah.
One of the best, if anybody looks it up, just boiler room speech, office speech. I forget who the actor was. But it's supposed to be like classic. I think it's Boiler Room. I'm pretty sure it's Boiler Room, but it'll get you hyped up.
That and Wolf of Wall Street.
Wolf of Wall Street, obviously.
I was thinking about that, yeah.
Wolf of Wall Street to get you pumped up, too. Maybe we should post those on Side Hustle Cincinnati. We should probably post something, like post motivational videos from movies, get people all hyped up.
Maybe you could recreate them, Adam.
Yeah, Friday Night Lights or something like that. Yeah, we could recreate it. That would be, yeah, we'd be terrible at that. But
I could do it in my blue suit.
I did take drama at SCPA, so believe it or not, for 6 years. So I'm not a professional.
And no drama career over here.
Yeah. Yeah, no drama career, except for I was on Dr. Phil and Judge Joe Brown. So
were you?
Yeah.
How'd that go?
I won. I guess if you could consider it winning.
What are you on Dr. Phil for?
Crazy Ex-Girlfriends, both of these things. So, yeah, I'm 2-0 on reality shows.
Wow.
Yeah, you can look it up.
Love it.
Judge Joe Brown, he got into trouble, so all his episodes got taken down. Pretty sure he got canceled more than just getting his TV show canceled. So, yeah, you can't find that one anymore, but Dr. Phil, it's still out there.
I want to see the episode of Crazy Ex-Girlfriends.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, it's all a transcript right now, but I bet you I could order the DVD. I need to.
Do you think we can revive your side hustle in drama? I mean, you know, can you start your own TV series? What do we got?
Potentially. Yeah. I mean, well, hey, we're on here. This is the first step.
Yeah.
This is the first time we're going on video, by the way, because episode one was not on video.
Well, episode one was on video.
It was.
Believe it or not. But now I've adjusted settings on this camera.
Official.
Yeah. So now it's yeah, man. I watched a YouTube video and I sat there with the guy and we were fiddling with the thing. So
love it.
It's apparently it's in good shape now.
Like this is
but you can learn on YouTube now. Why are you even going to go to school?
I know. Exactly. Well, this is what we were talking about in our last episode. It was there's so much out there. Like you remember, I mean, when we were younger, I mean, when I was younger, there was the card catalog.
We didn't have the internet.
Yeah. We didn't have the internet. You couldn't just like look up anything that you wanted. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, if I wanted to be, I don't know, a brain surgeon, not like I wouldn't go to school for that, but I could explore what it's like to be a brain surgeon. Yeah. I could get on YouTube and find information about it. I could go on Google and find probably tons of information on that.
You know, AR/VR goggles and do a fake surgery to see if you liked it.
Do all kinds of stuff, probably.
The world's yours.
Maybe Apple will create some of that AR/VR kind of e-learning.
Ooh, Apple glasses coming next couple of years.
I hear that.
So going back to the internet and not having the internet about the time you were graduating, how did you figure out to do what you were doing with the resale of the phones? Like, how
largely,
did you know
it wasn't on the internet. I mean, there was one site I found that was doing it, but I saw that as an opportunity because I knew it wasn't there and I knew the internet was, you know, growing and becoming a big thing.
So you filled the market.
I had a really bad site back then. It was called I Buy Sells and it worked.
But I mean, how did you even come up with the idea?
I'm not sure exactly how I came up with it, but I just saw it as an opportunity and I knew I was good at selling stuff online already because I was, you know, doing the eBay thing. So mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I should just make my own brand.
But like, did you know, I guess my question is, how did you know that you could get money off of used cell phones?
Because the market was the new phones and they were almost $200. Like now you can go buy an Android phone for, you know, $30 at Kroger's. It just wasn't out like that back then.
But then, cause you see it and it's just like, it was there. I saw it. But for somebody like me, I would have never thought, you know, what would be a great market for me is to sell used cell phones. Like I wouldn't even know that there was a market for it.
Yeah.
So I guess back in college, you know, I was focusing a lot on phones, but also was more open to doing other things. So people were selling me all sorts of random electronics, you know, game systems, stuff like that. And phones were just, you know, a very viable product because they sold super quickly.
Okay. So people were, I mean, so you were like.
Very high demand.
Yeah. So you kind of threw a couple out there on eBay and all of a sudden it was like, oh my God, these people are buying these like hotcakes. So then all of a sudden you're like, you know what?
You can sell a used Verizon phone a lot faster than you can Audi car fender.
Yeah.
That's true. So your dad's a doctor. When people hear that, they're probably thinking, oh, he had help from his dad or he had help. They had nothing to do with this. They were actually against this at first.
Yes. I started in their basement. I can claim that, you know, I used some of their supplies and I sold some random stuff they had as like starter capital, you know, stuff you just find in a basement. But other than that, yeah, I took it on my own.
So what did you, speaking of starter capital, what kind of startup capital did you need to get this going? And then once you started to scale up, did you need investors at all? Or
investors could have been nice. We can go into that. The startup capital, I'd say out of everything I sold at my parents' house, maybe there was a couple $1,000s of stuff. I had a few $1,000s of my own money. So maybe about $5,000 to really get it going. And if you had more money, you could just buy more inventory more quickly. So I was just constantly flipping it just to grow that capital. And I was plowing it back into inventory every single week. So I was limited to some extent, you know, on my organic growth because of my capital.
And you were getting a majority of your inventory from these resellers.
The Verizon phones I was getting, yeah, from the guys locally, just collecting them. You know, they'd come to my apartment once a week and bring me a whole sack of phones, and they'd walk out with $500 cash.
Wow. And then what would that that $500 in that sack of phones, what could you turn that into?
A few thousand.
So, yeah, you're looking an 8X, 8 to 10X multiple.
On the revenue line, yeah. And obviously there's, you know, I think one thing people don't understand is all the costs of being an entrepreneur. You know,
They don't know, actually, I want to talk about this. Talk about it a little bit.
So I might have spent $5 and sold it for $50, but I also bought, you know, a $2 car charger, a $2 home charger, a $2 case. I had to physically, wipe and check the phone myself. I also was, you know, cleaning it, packing it, you know, doing the shipping expenses, you know, doing the customer service. So, you know, there's a lot more that goes into it than just that.
So were they like, so did you have to like record, obviously you had to record sales for the IRS.
Yeah.
So how did you did all the bookkeeping then too?
For the first couple of years, I did all by myself.
Oh man. So you're doing everything. So you have to trace every transaction and take down,
yeah.
You have to do a lot of KYC stuff.
It was mostly on eBay. So it was really easy to track it through PayPal.
Okay. Yeah. That makes it a lot easier when you have someone else storing your record for you.
Exactly.
How much time would you say you were spending every week at this stage?
I was working 14 to 16 hour days.
14 to 16 hours.
Yeah. 6 to 7 days a week.
And how did that
make you? My parents would be mad that I like couldn't come like have dinner with them because I was just working constantly.
Well, your dad went to med school. He should be able to understand that.
Yeah.
Your mom lives with a doctor. She should.
Yeah. Well, they probably still thought it wasn't as real of a business at this point.
Right. So they were like, why is he spending so much time? He should be here at dinner with our family. Yeah. So
I couldn't stop like the customer service end. I just couldn't turn it off. I was waking up in the middle of the night if I went to bed earlier to do customer service. I was like, oh, they have to get their answers. And, you know, we've been 100% positive feedback on eBay. We're at 37,000 plus feedback right now. And that's unheard of.
You've got 37,000 pieces of customer feedback on eBay.
Yeah.
Is that the, where else do you have, I'm sure you have some Google reviews and things like that too.
Yeah, we're 4.6 or 4.7 on Google, even with a couple fake one-star reviews thrown at us.
Talk about where people can buy these, what you sell, like all these Macs, where can they buy them? I know you've got your store, but it sounded like it's closed up right now because of COVID.
Retail store is closed. We're 100% remote. If you go to sellyourmac.com, SellYourMac.com. That's our main site where we're buying back the product. And there's also a button on there that says buy renewed. And that'll take you to our new e-commerce site that's called RenewedMax.com.
Renewed Max. I don't think I knew about this one.
You didn't make that one.
I know I went to your warehouse one time and it was ridiculous. What do you have in your inventory right now?
About 2,000 Apple devices.
Wow. Is that a majority laptops or is that phones?
Mostly laptops. Laptops definitely are bread and butter. You know, after that, desktops and then phones and iPads. You know, the iPad and phone market is so hyper competitive. You know, people are willing to sell, you know, volume on those and make a dollar or two a piece. That just doesn't really make sense for us.
So what do you do? This is all foreign to me. This is why I love the idea of us doing a podcast.
We're all learning here.
A bunch of different ideas of different things people are doing. I sell you my used iPad. You take it, obviously you wipe it off of the iCloud and everything else.
We're going to tell you how to remove your stuff before you send it in, and then we're going to wipe it again as soon as we get it.
Okay. And then what about batteries? Do you guys put in new batteries or do you just go with
only if they need it? You know, a lot of people ask if I sell refurbished, and I would refurbish it if it required it.
Okay.
But if you use your iPad for 2 years, the battery probably holds 90% of its life still. So there's no reason to change it out. You know, if we're buying something that's, you know, let's just say an 8-year-old Mac, there's a good chance it might need a new battery. So we have a few different, you know, qualifications. It has to have, you know, over 80% of its battery. Otherwise, we're going to change
it. I have a Mac right now. I've had it for, I don't know, 8 years now. Maybe not 8 years.
That old 17 inch?
No. That 17 inch is still out there.
Is it alive?
It's classic. It's still working.
Wow.
It was my 15 inch.
Okay.
2014. So yeah, I guess it is 6 years old. 2014, the battery went out on that. And I think what happened is I went to, when I was in Barcelona, I plugged it in and there was too much juice coming
220
out.
220 volt, you jacked
probably, it up. Probably, yeah. Even though I had a converter on there and everything, I think it just blew the battery. So now, if it's open, if it's not plugged in, it lasts maybe 2 minutes and then it goes out.
Oh, 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Solid.
So I get 2 minutes out of it, you know, if I don't have power.
Just enough to power it up.
Yeah, just enough to power it up.
You can replace that battery for a couple $100, but honestly, probably isn't worth it. I would tell someone just to upgrade at that point.
At that point, yeah.
If it's 6 years old.
Yeah, yeah. So talk about so we talked a little bit about the process. People go on the website, they want to turn in their Mac, they wipe it, they send it into you, or they bring it in.
They send it in.
They send
everything
it in.
Is sent in. We send you a free shipping label via FedEx, and we send you a shipping box if you request it. So we really make it hassle-free.
Once you get that product, what happens then? What does your team do, and what does your team look like? What's the makeup of your team?
I got 20 team members right now. So as soon as it arrives at our warehouse, we're going to unbox it. We're going to scan it to pull up your record, and then we're going to wipe it. So it gets wiped literally at the first step in the stage. After it's wiped, we're going to fully test it just to make sure it's functional. And then after that, it goes to cleaning, and then ultimately gets photoed and sold. And, you know, basically within one day of it getting tested is when we're going to submit your payment.
So, we pay people, you've got Mac Geniuses.
PayPal or check, you know, usually PayPal these days.
So you've got your own Mac Geniuses.
We have 5 Apple certified Mac technicians on staff.
Wow.
Including myself.
I didn't include that
in my side hustle profile. You know, I'm a certified Mac technician.
That's probably more than I see at the actual Mac store when you go up there.
I try not to go up there.
Yeah, that's a nightmare up there. Well, talk about, so you had a lot of challenges. You were working 18-hour days, just crazy hours. You were doing everything. I know personally, I used to work at a big advertising agency, and my experience is now with my agency is that everything's virtual. So a majority of the people that work for me, I just pull into projects when they're available, right?
Yep.
And most of them are people that I used to work for these big agencies. Now, I feel like in a team, these people were really good. Like, I remember these people just being rock stars, you know? But when they go out and they start to freelance, they don't turn things around as quickly. The quality isn't there. I feel like they did some of it like last minute.
No one's pushing them on the deadlines.
Nobody's pushing them on the deadlines. No one else is accountable. They're not accountable to a team. And I think
they don't get fired as easily.
They don't get fired as easily.
Well, a lot of people are comfortable in roles.
They are.
They like to be the setup guy. No, they don't want to be the scorer. They want to be the guy. They want to be John Stockton. They don't want to be Carl Malone.
Scottie Pippen. Yeah. They don't want to be Michael Jordan.
It takes a visionary to be able to pull that off.
I don't think they're prepared to be Michael Jordan. And this is why I say that. I think the reason the quality was bad and the delivery was late is because they don't understand you're not sitting at that computer just being creative for 8 hours a day. You're sitting at that computer doing work for about 2 hours a day. And the rest of your time, especially if you're independent, you're a freelancer, you're spending the other 6-8 hours a day in QuickBooks. You're tracking, you're running down clients for payment. Mm-hmm. You're doing all the things you're not good at. Yeah. Oh, you're doing sales.
Yeah.
You're running down, you're asking, you know, you're replying to things, you're creating RFPs, you're doing all this other stuff that's taking a lot of your time.
Yep.
And you're only getting paid for those 2 hours. So a lot of people, I think they just quit. Instead of taking that next step to hiring people, they just get done. They said, you know what? This is too hard. I'm just going to go to a 9-to-5. How did that work for you, Brian, when you got to the point where you were like, I am just burning the midnight oil. I can't do this anymore. It's really hard because you look at your finances and you say, can I afford to bring someone else on?
The initial thought is that usually you can't afford that, but that can't be the mindset. If you can figure out how to, you know, grow the business while hiring someone, that has to be the next step. So at the point I did it, I hired someone to help me test phones when I physically were getting too many phones in. I couldn't get through them all. So to me, it was just an inventory issue. And I kind of scaled the business, you know, in that model organically. As I had more inventory to test, I would just hire more people to help me out.
Hmm.
I always stayed focused. You know, my big thing initially was the marketing and the sales. You know, mm-hmm. I was kind of the face and the vision of the company. So I stayed in that role and the customer service and just kind of kept hiring people more to do the processes behind the scenes.
So did you use any kind of formula? Like, did you actually run the numbers? You're being a finance guy. Did you have to run the numbers? Did you say, hey, look, here's what I'm making. Here's what this person's going to, or did you just kind of do it by feeling.
There was a lot of gut years feeling. Just by the seat of my pants. It was all gut. I feel like a lot of things in my life have been that way. It just it feels right, and you just go after it.
And at that point, too, you're working so much. To sit down and run these numbers and do all this other stuff, that just seems like additional work.
Yeah, I don't turn my attention to that. I'm just going to keep plowing ahead.
Just keep plowing
ahead.
And
it made sense. You know, if you can sell another, five phones a day, you can pay for someone to help test them. So
yeah, I was
going to
say,
keep going with that model.
If you can increase what your strength is, which was the important part with sales and marketing to bring in more customers, if you can focus more on that and give yourself a couple more hours a day, that's going to be more revenue to pay for this person.
So you had your connections with these resellers or whatever. You had those guys. How did you market this? You brought up sales and marketing. When did you start to realize, hey, I need to go outside of this original network I created, or I need to go into other markets and find more resellers? Walk us through that a little bit.
I think that's when I started the iBuySells.com website, because then, not that I was unbelievable at SEO or anything. I made this on, iWeb.
Okay.
So, now my business, SellerMac.com, one of the number one ways people find us is from the search engines on Google. If you type in, sell my Mac, we're number one in the world. But, back then I was just, trying to program my own meta tags and all these different things to try to get top in search. Didn't really know what I was doing, but it worked enough because there wasn't much competition.
So yeah, there's on-page SEO, off-page SEO, and then there's SEM. So SEM is paid search. So if you wanted to pay for ads based on particular keywords, so buy used Mac, right? You wanted to own that, right? So when anyone searches for buy used Mac, you want to be in those top sponsored links on the page.
Yeah.
So you could pay, and it usually costs, somewhere around like $2 to maybe $10 even for a click, depending on.
Especially with the Apple keywords.
iPhone's
pretty expensive.
What is that? How much is that? To
$4 or $5.
$4 or $5. So every time someone clicks on
clicks,
that.
How many clicks do you average per sale, you think? Because, I imagine you got to put that into your numbers, right? That's part of your advertising
back
costs.
Then I wasn't doing AdWords. We do a lot of AdWords now.
Mm-hmm.
So for people out there, SEO is broken into really two sections. It's on page, which you can control. And a lot of times you can do a blog, right? And you can plug,
More content.
It's all about content, right? Google, especially now, they've pretty much blacklisted all these like sneaky ways people used to, keyword stuff and things like that. But say you wanted to do a blog, about a particular term, right? So buy used Macs in Cincinnati. You could literally make the blog post name, the title of the blog post, those exact keywords, and it'll make the page name like part of the, it'll be sellyourmac.com/blog/buy-used-Macs-in-Cincinnati. So it'll actually be in the page name, right? And the URL, and Google looks for that, right? And then your H1 tag, which you could adjust in the back end of your website, that could be the exact same thing. Your page title or your page title, you could put it in the description, you could put it, 4% to 6% maybe of the body copy, you use that term. And then Google goes out on the web and says, hey, somebody just typed this in. Is there a page on the web that is exactly this keyword, this key search? And if you're the one with it, they'll send people there because you're the authority. Then there's off-page SEO, which is links and articles about your company, backlinks that come back to you. So if Cincinnati.com, if the Inquirer was to write an article about buying used Macs and they were using that exact same term and they linked that term.
Why have they not?
Yeah. Why have they not? Jeez. They should have. If you're listening to Cincinnati.com, you need to step it up and reach out to Brian Burke. But that buy, so in the article, it could say, I want to buy a used Mac in Cincinnati. Buy a used Mac in Cincinnati. They make that a link to his article that boosts the Google juice for his article.
We can start getting real technical.
We can get real technical.
Talk about do follow and do not follow links and stuff like that too.
Okay, so I'm shaking my head. But this is like Chinese to me, man.
And there's so much you can do on your website to actually be found on search. And most people, if they're doing it themselves, just aren't doing it.
And let's talk about like education. Like we were talking earlier, you can watch
YouTube.
You can watch tons of YouTube. You can watch Neil Patel.
Yep.
Neil Patel's great when it comes to marketing and SEO.
Yeah, you sent me his link when we were getting ready for this.
He's a marketing genius.
Guy's amazing, and he produces a ton of content. But you got to pay for those SEM, search engine marketing. You got to pay for with paid search, right? So you pay Google for every time somebody clicks on your stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So he's selling a product where it makes sense for somebody to pay $5 for a click to go buy a $1,500 computer.
Yep.
For everybody that's
typically
listening,
it's about $500. You know, $1,500 would be a pretty high end newer model, but we can
those are the ones
too.
I look at.
There you go.
But for everybody who's listening who didn't understand the last 5 minutes of this podcast, I'm right there with you. But that's
don't,
why we're
well,
here.
Don't worry. Adam's going to share some links to help people learn about SEO. It's one of the best things to learn about right now. And if you're looking, you know, for a job or a side hustle, SEO is going to be a massive growing opportunity in the future.
Yeah. I mean, and that's, again, like the harp on what we beat into the ground in the first one. That's why we build this community. Like, yep. I had no idea. I'm learning. I know that I got a lot of studying to do now. But this is fantastic. Now everybody's, if they don't understand it, at least they know what the acronym means. And at least now they're under, they know that they have to look into the SEOs so that they can understand that, hey, I know I got a great cake baking side hustle or whatever. Let's see how I, you know, what competitive advantage can I get on in the search engines so that people look for me for their wedding cake or for their kid's birthday.
Yeah, and everything's awesome. Hyper-localized right now. So if you type in anything, you really don't even have to type in Cincinnati. Like, it'll automatically bring up a map.
Google knows where you are.
Google knows where you are. I love so it. Google awesome. Knows everything about us, and so does Facebook.
Makes me feel warm and fuzzy.
Makes you feel warm and fuzzy. Well, this is interesting. So I guess if you could say anything like SEO, when you're doing SEO on your website, it's the blue-collar work of the advertising world. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of testing. It's a lot of going back. So you were doing a lot of that completely on your own, trial and error.
At the start, I was, yes.
And you would attribute some of that work to the success of what you were doing. You also had eBay. You were putting things up on eBay. And
eBay
you were,
helped me get found on the sales side. I mean, things are selling themselves on eBay.
So what is the opportunity good. Now, though? Like, I mean, you're
about to ask that question. Yeah, great question.
So
not what, as good, but still impressive. It's still hard. It's definitely gone down a lot, but I mean, it's still our biggest sales channel.
So how do like, okay, so let's say you don't want to take on physical inventory. How do you use eBay? Can you be just kind of like a broker?
There are some
eBay?
People that will buy our product and literally drop ship it right to another customer, but that's never been our model. And I'm highly against it personally because you can never deliver the expected quality. And one of the reasons people actually do drop ship from us is because if we're so meticulous about our qualities, they know their customer is going to be happy. But I would never want to buy just from a random person and ship a Mac to someone else, because if you didn't test it, how do you know it's even ready for them?
Explain drop shipping.
So drop shipping is, you know, someone lists on their website that they have a Mac for, you know, $700, and then they sell it, and then they go on our eBay store and they find it for $599. They buy it. They change the shipping information to send it to Adam's house, and they just made $100 and they didn't have to do anything except sit in their couch for a few minutes.
Yeah. That's what I was talking about.
What I hear a lot about now too is people buying things from Alibaba and having those drop shipped and create their own little store.
Yep.
So they'll get like a Shopify site, right? Which is cheap to build and it's got all the tools ready to go. $30 a month. And you know, a lot of times they still need to hire a designer because their graphics look like poo. So hire a good graphic designer.
Like Reversed Out.
Like, there you go. Reversed Out, my company. But go in there and then adjust that e-commerce store, make it look professional. And then you can find things on Alibaba or other sources where they will sell those things for super cheap. I remember people were doing fidget spinners. Remember those things? Is that what they were called? Fidget spinners?
God. Yeah. I should have owned stock.
Yeah.
My boys were like constant and it had to be different designs. The Batman one was like the one to get.
But you could get those on, 50 cents or whatever on Alibaba, and they were selling here for, $20 when they first came out?
I think it's all about building the trust. Like, you know, Alibaba just not being a local business, I think there's a lot of distrust, perhaps, and people don't know if they're going to get their products. So just buying it from someone in the U.S., you know, they don't know that it's being drop shipped, so they're more than happy about it.
So from a local perspective, I guess if anyone's listening to this and they're thinking, man, I want to be Brian Burke. Right. I want to be the next Brian Burke for boots, or I want to be the next Brian Burke for whatever. Right. There's opportunities through search, through eBay, yep. through Amazon, potentially buying things from third parties that will drop ship for you and you don't have to hold any inventory.
Certainly possible, especially with boots. You probably can drop ship those without testing them.
With that. Yeah.
But the big thing that the big in my opinion, the most important part of the recipe for success. They're going to have to really work hard to match him, and that's customer service, because that's what builds trust. I mean, that's why Amazon blew up, right? Everybody was like, wait a minute, I don't have to pay to return this? There's no fee, there's no fine for not liking this product?
Zappos.
Ease of use.
Didn't Zappos start that whole thing? Like, don't worry about it if you don't
Zappos
like it.
Zappos is free for a year, or you could return it.
Yeah.
And you build loyalty, you build trust, and you guys are doing the right things
trust
with your
customer
quality.
Trust and customer service are huge.
Yeah, so, I mean, people will pay for a little bit more if they know that they can trust what they're getting. They don't want, what is it, the saying is...
More and more now, I feel like, is people don't want that hassle of, having to go return something or just deal with it if there's an issue. So I think that, they're definitely willing to put it out there if they know they're going to get the right thing and they're going to have the service if anything did go wrong.
What do they say? Buy right, cry once?
Yeah, there you go. I never heard of that, but yeah.
I like it.
Sounds right. So... talk about numbers. Talk about where you're at now with the business.
So we've grown it organically almost every single year. Last year we did just about $11 million in sales. And just to be clarified, that is not profit.
Man, I remember talking to you a couple of years ago and you said $5
million. So last year we only grew 3%, but the year before we grew 95%.
Wow.
So we were at somewhere around 5.8 and then we grew it to over 10.
Do you find that you're in cycles with Apple's new release of different Macs or different? I know they just released it. Did they release new Macs every year? Is it every 2 years?
Cycles definitely help. It depends. This year they're going to come out with another new Mac, but they came out with new Macs earlier in the year. So I would say that each product line gets updated about once a year on the laptop side. Mm-hmm. But on the desktop side, usually every year it's only an incremental, possibly a processor or something like that. The iMacs could be 2 to 3 years between. The Mac Pro was 6 years between its update, and the Mac Mini just about the same.
Another thing I want to talk about, because a lot of people don't realize how important timing is for a business. When we started Dotloop, I mean, we started that in 2008, 2009, kind of in the middle there. Late in 2008, we started talking about it, but the real estate market had crashed. And we talked a little bit about this on the last podcast. Mm-hmm. You've got a situation now where I believe, because I'm trying to follow used cars, new cars right now, and how the recession plays into what are people buying? They're not really buying new cars is what I hear. And they're buying the used car market, though, is on fire right now. So do I want to go out during a recession with my PPP money or whatever in the world I got and go buy a $2,500, brand new Mac, or do I want to go to sellyourmac.com and pick up one for $500-$600? How is that? And you talked about your growth.
It'd be a very different Mac if you're trying to buy the $2,500 brand new one. Let's say from us, it'd be, $1,800. Just to give that, kind of level of difference.
But I'm a graphic designer. I'm going to want like the hottest, newest thing all the time. But most people, I would assume they want a quality machine. They're using it primarily for the internet. They don't need to go out and get anything too crazy.
No, I mean, $500 to $1,000 gets you a very nice Mac. The one thing we're seeing right now is the supply is so dried up. And it's because everyone's, trading them down to people in their family. They're using extra devices at home to, work remotely from home. And they're just not selling them at the
same
rate.
I didn't think about that. So people are looking for used Macs probably, but there's no inventory, almost like real estate right now.
Demand is enormous. Demand is 10,000 times bigger than we could supply.
Has that impacted your buyback price?
We've constantly increased our price. Almost every week it goes up. Kind of hand in stick, with the mm-hmm. sales price. So we're not making that much more margin. We're just paying our customers more.
That's what I was at. I didn't word that correct. That's what I meant.
And then on these larger bid deals that it's impossible to win, they're getting, people are buying the used Macs for almost what the new Macs cost. Just a big iPad deal I lost the other day for a 3-year-old iPad. They were selling for $250. The brand new iPad comes out tomorrow. It's $329. Like, it doesn't make any sense at all.
But it's just, what people it's are willing to get
it's
rid
what's
of them
available.
For. Yeah, it's just hey, if I'm going to sell you this, what do I want to pay? What do I want to get back for selling you this thing that I can't find for any cheaper than $300 anyway?
Exactly. They're willing to pay almost the same for a used.
So these trends, how owning a business, talk a little bit about that. Like, how do you stay on trends, and how do you stay on things like how much does recessions and how does that affect your business? And then how do you pivot in order to accommodate what's going on in the market?
Honestly, never been worried about the recessions. You know, in 08, 09, we were growing 100% a year. And I guess, you know, I'm at a smaller base at that point, so technically it's easier to grow by a lot. You know, this year has been a lot different. And I think it, you know, if it was a normal recession, the supply hit would not have been the same. You know, we took a big hit. People were not sending in any of their items, you know, back in, you know, March. No one wanted to go to the FedEx store to drop off anything. And all the businesses are, you know, virtually closed. So I don't look at it necessarily as the economic cycle dictates it, because I think there's a huge opportunity either way. You know, in a downturn, people are going to want to sell their Macs to get more cash back, and then people want to buy more used Macs anyways. In a, you know, very high up cycle, people are going to be buying the newer Macs, you know, much more quickly, and then more willing to sell their used Macs. So I think either market's a win-win for us.
I actually heard that about eBay, where eBay's good either way.
Yep.
And because you are in kind of a business,
Track very similar to eBay. That makes
sense. You track very similar to eBay. Yeah. Okay.
Now, like, your advertising, is it just on Google?
Not doing much advertising at all. So it's mostly organic SEO, that people just search in Google and just find us organically. We do AdWords on there just for certain, you know, keywords that we really want.
Have you thought about like doing partnerships with school districts?
I need to do more partnerships. That's something I'm aware of. And schools are really tough to crack. You know, they have so many rules about bidding their product out that it makes it really hard to win, and you almost can't just go direct.
So, yeah, I guess they have
private schools are very different, by the way. You can do direct deals with them. The sales cycle is enormously long. I mean, it could take 6 months, let's say, to close a school deal, and you're going through, you know, the board and stuff like that, versus a company. You know, if I was to buy a Mac from Adam's company, you know, we can just make the deal over email, and I can send them a shipping label, and we're done. So a little bit easier sales cycle. And I don't have a big outsourced, you know, team doing the procurement. So we're just kind of limited to, you know, what we have right now. And that kind of goes back to, you know, not taking on any investment. Is I've just been growing the business organically, and I am leaving some opportunities on the table.
So but you're not overly leveraged either.
Not leveraged.
So you've got that security. You can take on leverage. You can take on debt if you needed to, if you decided that you wanted to grow quicker.
Sure.
But you've decided that you wanted this to be manageable, low debt, high earning ratio. So that's nice.
A little bit less stress with that too. I'm not sure what it's like to have an investor, but I definitely have, there's some stress around it.
It's stressful. Yeah. Cause you want to perform. You don't want to let people down. You know, there's, That happens a lot. I mean, speaking of schools here, Brian got me into volunteer opportunity. Like, we're both board members on Adopt a Class, which is a great, great program. And talk about a little bit about Adopt a Class, because I'd love to plug them here on the show since we're both sitting here.
Yeah. So Adopt a Class is a group mentoring experience, and businesses and nonprofits will go in, they'll adopt a classroom in a underprivileged school. You know, the one that we've adopted with Adopt a Class is Rothenburg Academy here in Over the Rhine. And, you know, we're going into the classroom, you know, once a month right now we're doing it virtually, just to clarify. And we're talking to students, kind of teaching them what it's like to be a business person and showing them there's another way to live your life besides being a professional sports player or a drug dealer or whatever else they might think is an opportunity for them. And letting them kind of see the inside of the business that maybe they hadn't seen before, you know, taking them to the business and showing them how it operates. And
being a positive influence.
Yeah, being a positive influence.
Being an adult positive influence. Because, you know, in these types of neighborhoods, I mean, the most successful adult they know is a drug dealer.
Unfortunately.
Or it's a guy who, you know, blew out his knee playing college football. You know, he was going to make it and then he blew out his knee. Now he's kind of doing nothing. But, you know, he's the success, right? Because that's the only guy you know. And there's like three or four things that you really want to do in your life. And entrepreneurialism really might not even be one of them, or the things they want to do, they don't even realize are entrepreneurial. But I mean, Brian's here making $11 million a year in a business that he started. I mean, good luck doing that out on the streets. I mean, it's not going to happen. But you know, one good thing about Adopt a Class, I really love the program. You get these people from these big companies, like we've got Procter & Gamble, Cintas, Kroger, you name it. I mean, they put teams together Children's Hospital, I believe, right? And they go down.
Merrill Lynch.
Merrill Lynch. Yeah, Merrill Lynch is huge with us. So they bring these young, I'd say they're young leaders, the people they're grooming for.
Emerging leaders.
Emerging leaders. Yeah. And they send them down to these schools. So they, and a lot of these people don't come from these environments, right? So they're going down there to learn who's in the community, which I love, because then that means eventually these guys are being groomed for executive positions. When you're being groomed for executive positions, it might be a good idea to know who's in your community, because at some point you're going to be in a position to help support that community and the needs in that community.
Hire from within that community.
Hire from within, or you're going to have employees that come from diverse backgrounds like that. So you have to understand where, who are these folks? What are they, what are their struggles, and what can I help them with?
No, it's really cool. I love being part of the organization and, you know, just seeing the kids, you know, light up and do these activities and you're teaching about business. I mean, they're really excited.
Yeah. And a gentleman, Bill Burwinkle, he owns some buildings and yeah, mostly on the West Side, buddies with Buddy LaRosa. Let's bring back Buddy LaRosa's into this conversation.
Advertisement here.
Yeah. A little advertisement. LaRosa's pizza is delicious. But yeah, so Bill Burwinkle started it. You can't find a more passionate person about the community. And he, I think he started Auto Oiler School in Price Hill. Lower Price Hill, which is in desperate need of help. Desperate. So, yeah. So talk about the future, Brian. Talk a little bit about where you want to take this thing and what you see in the next, say, 3 to 5 years.
I'd like to be the easiest and fastest way to trade in any Apple product. So there's a lot of ways we could do that. And, you know, we don't have any customer accounts set up right now. So we think we have a lot of opportunity to, you know, get people having a login and account so they can store all their products on there and make the trading process, you know, much faster. And I kind of envision it the same way Amazon is one click to buy. I want to be one click to sell. So you go on there, it knows your product. You click one time, you are done.
You need to patent that.
I've tried.
One click to sell.
Vance Van Drake. So
Vance is a beast too. Anybody needs any IP work done, Vance Van Drake. Man, we're plugging everything out here. What, well, we got IP, we got adopt a class, we got pizza. Yeah, man.
I love it. We got a lot more side hustles.
We haven't even talked about these other side hustles. Yeah.
He does wine tastings.
So last weekend, I did perform a wine tasting for five ladies. And this is my side hustle called Party Somm. So I'm a sommelier, which means you're a wine salesman, more or less. And I have always been really passionate about wine. I started, you know, taking little tastes when I was younger and just learning about it. And after my passion, you know, reached a certain point, I realized I might as well just get certified. You know, let's take this to the next level. So I basically just read two books. The Wine Bible is the number one book I would recommend to read. And it's scary if you first look at it. I think it's like 1,300 pages or something like that. The first 300 pages will increase your knowledge 100 times about wine. And the rest is mainly geography.
There's probably a lot of people listening to this that would consider doing some kind of side hustle with wine. I mean, wine's hot right now, especially with COVID. So sommelier, you do party sommelier.
I think there's a much bigger opportunity now to do the virtual wine tastings. And it's something I haven't even tried yet. But I think that I could be delivering a great virtual wine experience and just walk people through it like that. There's no reason I have to be on site. You know, I see these companies now doing a lot of like virtual like cocktail classes and stuff like that. They'll send ingredients out, you know, to all their, you know, high-end customers, and you know, someone will, you know, lead a virtual tasting.
A Zoom wine tasting. You don't have to go into some old person's house with like worry about tons of cats and all that stuff. You can just do it from your living room. That'd be awesome.
Perfect.
I get that Hustle newsletter, and they said something. There was a company on there today, and I just kind of read through it quickly. But it was they call themselves the Netflix of wine. So it's like a subscription, like wine subscription.
There's a lot of wine subscriptions now.
Yeah, you might want to look that up. But it's, I don't know. Apparently they're killing it. Like they're the leader in the space or whatever.
So I invite you over to my house. And is part of the package, like, do I supply the wine or do you supply the wine?
I can do it a number of ways. I would first talk to you about what kind of wine you like. And, you know, if you tell me, oh, I like, you know, red, I like it, you know, juicy, fruit forward, however you want to describe it, then I'll come back and either tell you what I'm going to bring, or if you want to be surprised, I would do that too. So this particular one I could talk to, the one I did this last weekend, you know, it was for her good girlfriend's birthday party, and she really liked rosé. So I did a couple of rosés and a couple of reds. And I did tell her what they were before I actually came. But she was very open to, you know, whatever I was going to bring. And I decided to do a blind tasting. So they didn't have any blindfolds on, which is what a couple of them thought, you know, right away was kind of funny. So I actually have these velvety bags you can put around the wine bottles and it hides them. So it, you know, trains your brain to think more about what you're doing than just seeing the wine and the label
it.
And jump. Yeah. Like, oh, it's a $20 wine or it's a $40 wine and making an assumption.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was really cool that we were able to do that. And, you know, we talked a lot about the flavors. You know, I brought a flavor wheel basically that you can, you know, see, oh, this is a citrus flavor. This is a woody flavor. Or this is, you know, an earthy flavor, you know, whatever it might be. And then describing them from there kind of gives you all those words to use because there's, you know, 1,000 wine words. You really can make it up. It's whatever you want it to smell and taste like. There's nothing right. Everyone's palate is so much different. If you taste something, I might not taste it. It doesn't mean neither one of us is necessarily right.
So do you also do like food pairings with it? Do you do like...
I could. I'm an at-home chef. This is not technically a side hustle, but I could do some Zoom chef classes.
You should
classes.
See this guy's Instagram.
I don't post as much. I don't want to make everyone too hungry.
I'll look it up.
He went on a streak there, though.
Yeah. So I did ask her if she was going to have food because I think food is very important to the experience. And she got a huge kind of charcuterie cheese platter from a local shop. One thing I really recommend is having a bite of cheese before you do your tasting. It'll change your complete flavor profile of your mouth. Whatever you had before might have just ruined whatever you were going to taste. So next time you open a bottle of wine, take one sip and then take a bite of like Parmesan cheese, for instance, and try it again. Completely different.
See, my my wife's aunt and uncle are huge in the wine. They're huge in the cheese. And he can be, her uncle can be kind of pushy about eating cheese with the wine.
Yeah.
And I've, out of a little bit like friendly spite, I've been like, I'm okay. But now I'm going to give it a shot next time now.
Doesn't have to be constantly consumed. I mean, I think literally a bite.
No, I understand what you're saying. He's like, you got to try this. This is from here. I'm like, that is way too much money to spend on cheese.
You know, we're not going out to all these restaurants anymore right now. But, you know, when we were, typically they open the bottle of wine. You've had nothing to eat. Who knows if you brushed your teeth on the way over or you had some other weird, you know, a drink, a Coke or whatever it might be that, you know, would ruin your palate. And the first sip you have and they're looking at you asking if it tastes right. And you're like, how do you know? I mean, wine doesn't usually taste anything like it does an hour later compared to the second you opened it to begin with. So I usually like to ask for a little bit of shaved Parmesan if I can during the tasting.
I feel cultured. I feel extremely rude about my past, but now I feel cultured.
Our wine and cheese in Price Hill was grape Kroger Pop and Cheetos.
Mine in high school.
There you go.
Mine in high school was Mad Dog 2020.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of people drinking Mad Dog in my neighborhood, too. That, and there was like some 40-ounce bottle called Laser and King Cobra. They were like 79 cents. I remember how much people were paying for them. We all used to hang out. We had a little gang. We used to hang out up on Glenway Avenue in front of the Pony Keg. If you guys even call it Pony Keg, but it's like a little corner store. And they just used to drink 40s, except for me. I'd keep my eye out.
I think I had one of those back in college. It's been a while.
But Mad Dog ruined the experience for me because when I was telling you last week, we played that football game in Paris. And so we always had to meet the bus by Notre Dame. And we would go to this guy's bar every night. So the last night he brought out all this different wine. And are you supposed to just put it in your mouth and like let your taste buds get the nodes and all that other stuff?
You actually should suck it over your tongue and helps aerate the wine as you're tasting it.
See, we weren't even tasting the wine. We were just like, oh, thank you. And we were like downing his samples. And I was like, I just don't get it. But now when people teach you how to do it, tell you how to do it, it makes sense.
Yeah, you can't.
I think
can't
if you like
back.
Wine, I mean, I'm not a drinker, but I think if you like wine, it would make sense to just do one of these with Brian.
Yeah.
Just to, like you're saying, just educate yourself because you're just going and buying some Yellowtail or whatever in the heck you can get your hands on at Kroger and just downing it. Like, you need to understand what you're doing here, I think. Is what it sounds like.
Yeah.
One thing funny you mentioned is, you know, do I supply the wine or not? And I'm actually thinking of a whole new model right now. This is so great about side hustles. You can keep developing it. I could have you open any bottle of wine in the world at your house and be on a Zoom call with 20 people. And we all can just talk about it and learn together. It doesn't have to be an exact thing that we're walking down that path on the same wine.
I'm only going to do it if you wear a bow tie.
I will wear the bow tie.
Sweet.
My wife got me this bow tie, by the way.
Nice. Let's talk about that. Because you just said you're a successful businessman, you're a sommelier, and you're a chef. ladies, if you're listening, he is married. Two beautiful kids.
Yes.
You could, but he could. His last side hustle could be Zoom, how to make him, you know, a Renaissance man out of your son.
Oh, there you go. There you go. Yeah.
Could do it.
Before they get taken, you know?
Hey, while we're talking about wine and kids, I started a business with my daughter, Bella.
Yes.
How old is she?
She's 3 and a half.
All right.
I committed to her. I can help her start a business by age 7. And I was telling someone, I was, you know, being interviewed again for EY Entrepreneur of the Year, and they're asking about some of these other things that I'm working on. And I mentioned that. And I was like, you know what? Why am I going to wait till 7? I'm going to start it this week. And then I started it. It's that easy.
Talk about her business. Talk about what she's.
So
listen, people, if his daughter can start a business with his mentorship, you can do it. You're grown.
She's doing a decent amount of the work. You know, I'm still stepping into. She doesn't know how to print all the labels out online yet. So we have a wine bottle that we really like at home, and it's called Belle Gloss. So it's almost the name, almost the spelling of her name, and it's a gorgeous bottle. Has this red wax label on it. I almost brought you one. I'll get you one later. So awesome. I decided that I would like people to use this as an olive oil decanter. And I thought of this idea about a year ago, and I decided this was the perfect opportunity to start a business with my daughter that was simple enough that she could get it and she could see the product, and it wasn't a super high cost item. So it's easy to sell to people and it's kind of fun. So we basically, I'd stored up a couple dozen of these empty bottles. And we, you know, did a process to remove the labels together. And, you know, then I'm putting on a special olive oil topper. And Bella helped me, you know, write a card to everyone. And that's basically the business, is that we're just selling these olive oil decanters that are formerly wine bottles. And it's a very specific bottle. And I'm not collecting people's old bottles to do this with. So that is the Bella bottle in a nutshell.
That's awesome. That's something she's always going to remember, too.
She talks about it. She's selling them at her school to some of the teachers.
And she's passionate about
she's
it.
Like, she's like, I have a Bella bottle. And people are like, you know, what is that?
Well, buy it and I'll show it to you.
Yeah, $25, guys. Not crazy.
It's not outrageous at all. So what else do you have going on, or what else would you say to people listening today about starting a business? Your child is running her own business right now.
Bella bottle.
What would you?
She's trying to give money back too. It's really, we had a great discussion in the car the other day, and you know, she said, "Daddy, I want to give them some of my money because I can make more money." A little entrepreneur already.
That's awesome. So she knows that there's responsibility that comes with being an entrepreneur or being blessed and having an opportunity like she does. She knows that there's responsibility that comes along with that too. To people who are less fortunate.
Well, it's different having daughters and sons. My daughter,
sons are like, I want all the money.
Yeah, my daughter's as sweet as it gets.
That's funny.
I think girls really are look out for other people.
Maybe they just get it faster.
Yeah, they pay much more attention. We have to be educated.
We have to mature a little bit later.
I think if we fall on our ass a couple times and we get help, I think we learn that, you know what, it takes a community to be successful. So
it does.
But and like we were talking about last week, there's a lot of negativity around capitalism, around business owners. There's this assumption. I mean, when I was renting real estate, you know, that was one of my first side hustles. You know, people just assumed I was rich as all hell because I had a house, like, and I was renting it out. But, you know, the reality is most landlords have one property, and if you miss your payments, they're probably missing mortgages payments and they're getting in trouble and you're hurting them financially. But business people in general, I don't think a majority of business people, I won't say all, but I think a majority of business people, I don't think they have any kind of malice towards people. I think the more successful you get in business, the more you hate seeing people not successful because you know you made it through.
It's possible.
And you can't, you know it's possible, and you see, man, this person's really struggling. Like, I hate seeing that. And the truth of the matter is, if you're poor, you can't help anybody.
You have to make money to be able to give back. I mean,
if you really want
to give back your time
to help other people, then there's a responsibility. Go out, start a business, make money, hire people.
The Bella model.
And she's learning early.
Well, it's in her. She was born with it.
She was.
So talking about giving back, I just launched a whole new part of our business called Trade In for a Purpose. And the reason I did this is because I've always loved gifting Macs to underprivileged students. And there really was an opportunity to make it a more formalized program. And, you know, in the past, I'd done some gifting, you know, through Adopt a Class, through Cincinnati Youth Collaborative and some other local organizations. And I really wanted to take that to another level. So now you can go trade in our website and I'll put $20 towards gifting a Mac to an underserved student.
How many have you given away so far?
We just launched this week.
Just launched this week. Well, yeah. let us know when the first one goes.
Last week we donated, last year we donated about 30.
Nice.
Yeah, I remember seeing a lot of posts about that because you're taking pictures with these kids in these schools.
Yeah.
How many have you donated altogether?
I would say somewhere between 60 to 100.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Back when I started, it was maybe like one a year, you know.
Well, like that puts students that weren't on level footing on, you know, level footing in terms of technology.
I'll tell you what, when I started the Art Institute of Pittsburgh, right after I left here, right, it was my first college I went to. It was a 2-year private art school, right? Well-known art school.
In Pittsburgh.
But unfortunately in Pittsburgh. And I had a big Bengals sticker on the back of my car. And
you say, this guy's a huge Bengals
fan.
They didn't like that. He's traveling in Europe. He's wearing his Bengals gear and his UC gear.
That's right.
He's got the big chain and the Cincinnati red shirt and Cincinnati red hat. He's in Sicily or he's like right outside the Sistine Chapel. It's like.
He's American.
Yeah.
But then you run into someone from Cincinnati, right? You had someone come
up to
you. You
do, randomly. Like, you'll run into people. Like, they'll be like, hooday. Or they'll be like, hey, go Reds. Or I'll see people in Bengals shirts, and I'll be like, hooday, and they won't know what I mean. So I'm like, oh, they must be, like, European and not really hip to it. They just got, like, a Bengals shirt.
I always comment on people's shirts. I just very out loud when I want to say something to people. And no one knows what they're wearing. They'll have a saying on their shirt, just like you're saying, and they have no idea they even have it on. It's hilarious.
Well, when I started at AIP, I didn't have a computer, right? And this was back in the day when, you know, everybody had desktop computers, there were no laptops. This was 1995. And nobody had, you know, everything was just this.
Windows 95 was released. Wow.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So a lot of the kids at my school, though, they had computers, right? And my alternative was
go library,
go to the lab. So there was a lab, but unfortunately,
I remember the computer. That's what I had to use in college was a computer lab.
Yeah, you had to use a computer lab. But you remember when like Doom and Wolfenstein first came out, and like they
a great game.
Oh, it was a great game, right? But everybody and my school was nothing but nerds. There was no women in my class. It was all dudes. It was all nerdy, like manga dudes, right?
You were in Pittsburgh.
Yeah. Well, I was going to school for computer animation and. It was a nerdy dude thing to do, right? So they were just in the lab playing this game. Like you would network computers. Like they just had like a local network and they were all in there playing each other. Meanwhile, I'm sitting there for 2 hours in this little plastic chair waiting for somebody to get off of a computer just so I could get on there and do my homework, right? So I'm in school, I don't know, 16 hours a day. You know, my classes might have been 4 hours worth of my day. And I'm, you know, doing all kinds of stuff, but I'm afraid to go back home because I'm like, oh, I got to use the lab at some point today. So let me stay here and I'll do some more work in another lab. Mm-hmm. But
having that personal device is crucial. I mean, yeah, you're locked in a lab all day when you could be learning and, you know, doing your schoolwork, you know, from your desk.
Well, the reason I bring it up is because think of all those extra hours I wasted when I could have just gone home, popped open, you know, got on my computer and did my work, right? I probably could have been much more productive or, you know, had like a little side job or something going on while I was in school.
Well, not even just productive, dude. You could have actually been on the computer playing around. You could have been more creative.
A lot more creative. I could have took more time actually doing the work instead of
playing more Doom.
Or playing Doom, yeah. Yeah. And I really never got on Doom. My thing was SimCity back then. But, you know, you've impacted people, these kids, it probably in ways you don't even understand. Like you're giving them the opportunity to have their own computer to get on there and discover things. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're probably using that computer to watch YouTube videos.
It's a tool to succeed, whether they're, you know, learning, doing a job, whatever they're going to do with it is going to help affect them now and the future of their life.
That's right. That's right.
Well, I mean, when they graduate high school and then they go to college, and then they go to the real world. They're going to be up to date with all the kids coming from more privileged background.
Yep.
Because they've had the opportunity to learn on. I mean, everybody that I know, kid wise, is on a Mac. So it's going. I mean, they're you know, they are all using the same equipment and the same technology as these other kids. So you've opened a door that may have been shut in years past. That's awesome.
That's one of my goals.
If I could be a futurist here for a minute, I feel like there's going to be a lot more kids coming up that are going to have one, two side hustles, even through college.
You're going to have to.
Yeah, I think you're going to have to because, you know, you got the cost of education going up. You see what happened to the millennials with the – I mean, they're all crying about, you know, how expensive school is.
Are people going to go to college in 10, 20 years, Mr. Futurist?
Maybe not. But there will be some people. Like, I mean, I think you're still going to have folks that are – I mean, even you. Like, you went to school. I think there is something to – the camaraderie of being in school.
I use almost 0% of my degree, but I have amazing lifelong friends.
Yeah. You have a lot of friends. You learned how to think critically while you're in school.
Maybe not.
Yeah.
You got to be in New Orleans during your formative years.
That was pretty exciting.
That would have been awesome.
But at this point, is it worth $60,000 a year to be in New Orleans during your formative years?
Yeah. Maybe not. I mean, and how do you pick that up?
And a lot of people will tell you no. I mean, obviously, it depends what kind of career you want. And if you have a career that requires education, right, well, then clearly you have to. But if you're going to be an entrepreneur or a salesperson or a web developer, it's not a whole lot of upside.
I try to get my sons to think about this, but, you know, they've grown up where you go to college and you're going to, you know, get your degree and whatever. I always thought that the best way to do it for kids that didn't want to be a doctor or didn't want to be a lawyer or didn't want to be a college professor or something that required a graduate degree was to get into a trade or work for someone like yourself who's been an entrepreneur, who's still an entrepreneur, I shouldn't say in the past tense. But and then when you know what it is that you want to do, then you can focus your study. Yes. On become because NKU has an entrepreneurship program.
So go to school and they have no idea the whole time.
Right. Now all of a sudden you're like, oh, okay. So this professor starts talking about something instead of it being something you read in a book or you just skimmed in a book and you're on your computer taking no notes whatsoever, but you're on, you know, you're looking at your social media. Yeah. Or your
Facebook.
Playing. Yeah. Now all of a sudden it makes sense. You're like, oh, well, we ran into the same problem with our inventory 2 weeks ago. So I'm, you know, this is the way that I plan for just-in-time inventory or whatever it is.
Exactly.
Whatever course you're in.
You go home and apply it. You learn a new marketing or sales trick. You go home and try it.
I think the future is going to be kind of like pay for order, whatever, however you want to put it, like a a la carte college degree. Because
I would like that.
It makes more sense.
You can go on iTunes U right now on your iPad or iPhone or Mac and get some free learning on there. I mean, you can be on Coursera or Udemy, and pick your course and, start your side hustle.
Or universities just catch up and they say, hey, look, people are coming here to learn to be entrepreneurs. Let's be a place that facilitates communication between entrepreneurs. Like let's be this community of people.
Let's invest in their future. So instead of charging them an arm and a leg, because we've got some professors that are, they've got tenure and we got to pay them astronomical.
To not teach?
Well, not just to not teach, but teach courses that aren't going to benefit 90% of the students on campus. So why don't you invest in the student? Why don't you say, hey, instead of us charging you tuition, you're as an entrepreneur, 2% for the first 5 years or whatever. Or over 10 years, we take 2% of.
I love that because they're putting their money where their mouth is.
Yeah.
So, right? They're incentivized now to get you a job.
So there actually is a school that started that in New York.
How's that going?
They partnered with businesses that you're basically guaranteed a role at their company when you graduate from their program. And they do take like a 5 or 10% of your salary for the first, few years to literally compensate them for investing in you.
Yeah, I mean that's what they do with soccer. I mean, in Europe, if you have a kid and your club, because they don't do the pay to play like we do here, and you'd spend all that time developing this kid from the age of 7 to the age of 15, and then he's great and he goes to Chelsea or Liverpool or Barcelona or whatever. Mm-hmm. Every step that he goes up, you get compensated for the education that you provided.
It's all about adding value. That's the only thing that matters at that point.
See, that's another side hustle. We need to do a la carte college.
Yeah.
People out there. Get it accredited. And then we can start.
I feel like there's a lot of certifications out there right now like that, but maybe not as specific as you're thinking or what it could be in the future. Is that you could go to, take a Harvard class on, you know, a specific subject and have that certification.
Yeah.
But that's not going to get you another job, but it's a great, you know, tool if you're just trying to learn.
It's great for your industry or whatever you're in.
Yeah.
All I know is that geology was my hell. Like, I'm sure if that, as being Catholic, believing in hell, if I die and I didn't live the right way,
it's all rocks for you.
24/7 in geology.
Wow.
It was awful. Alluvial fans, that's the only thing I remember. And like the hardness scale, where can it cut glass?
Oh.
I won't even tell you guys. I looked at my high school transcript the other day because I was going through some papers and I was like, golly, like I sucked in high school.
Straight C's for Adam, I tell you.
Oh, man. Well, we lived in like a one-bedroom apartment. In order for me to study, I had to go into the closet and put a pillow over my head.
Oh, wow.
So that I couldn't hear like Wheel of Fortune going on.
And
the
now we're in a closet doing a podcast talking about side hustles.
That's right. This in this room's a little bit
definition
bigger than that.
Of success.
I love it.
Yeah, that's right. So what do you, what would you say to someone out there who, you know, is laboring away at a 9-to-5 job, you know, maybe they're deep into their career, even, you know, a couple years, you know, 5 years into their career, whatever, or, you know, 10, 20 years into their career.
40.
Like, yeah.
There's never an age where you have to think you're done. And I think people might assume that, you'd, oh, I'm 40 or I'm 50 or I'm 60. I can't turn back. I'd say that's the exact opposite. You know, spend your time on nights and weekends, you know, doing what you're truly passionate about, where your values really lie. And then at some point, if it is successful, you'll be able to cross over and then go in and tell your boss, hey, guess what? I got this great side hustle. I'm out.
The success rate goes up for entrepreneurs in their 40s. There's a much higher success rate.
I have read that, yes.
For if you're over 40.
Because you're smarter. You got your head on your shoulders straight by that point.
Yeah, you're not worried about the same type of things you were worried about before. Maybe your kids are fairly, you know, your kids are kind of out of that baby stage. You're married. You're not running around to the club. Like, you're not drinking. You're pretty much matured.
You're not going to the club anymore, Adam?
I know. I had to retire from the club. But
Your definition of success is different, too.
Yeah.
So it allows you to focus in a different way.
Yep.
You're not all over the place.
Potentially there's two incomes, so you may have more flexibility to be able to do something. I'd say like if you're young and you started while you were still like out of
grade school.
Yeah, grade school. I mean, and you were living with your parents. I think that's probably a good time to start for a lot of people. Like, hey, if you want to build the like foundation of a business, maybe it's during that time when you don't have all these bills and you haven't committed to a new car and all this other stuff, and which is awful to do, by the way.
I was trying to save more money and live at home. My mom kicked me out because she said my eBay stuff overtook her basement.
Yeah.
I turned it into a, you know, eBay studio.
Yeah. But those kind of people, I think the really early or people who have already worked in a business. And here's the thing. Those people that are in their 30s, 40s, they've probably got an idea for a side hustle that they are just like they think about every great once in a while. Like, I should start that. I should start that. I should start
just
that.
Spend 1 hour a week doing it.
Good point.
I mean, it's not that, you know, when I started my party sign wine business, I didn't go out and invest thousands of hours in this wine thing. I mean, I can pull off a 2-hour tasting with, you know, 2 hours of prep. So it doesn't have to be some enormous investment of your time to, you know, do something you're passionate and love.
Yeah. What did they say? Like a river eventually creates like a little trickle of water eventually creates like a, you know, a river or the Grand Canyon. Right.
Mm.
So
we'll talk about the
it takes
candy.
Time.
I mean, start making a little bit of money before you think about making the big money. I mean, you got to start somewhere.
Yeah. Just small successes and build on those successes. You don't have to hit a home run when you first go out there.
But it has to start because who knows what's going to happen with the economy.
It has to start.
And then you look at all the people that are going to be on their 401ks and they're at the mercy of the market.
Yep. Or Social Security. Is there Social Security going to be around for us?
It's not for us.
I don't know. I mean, and you look at Brian. He started a business that's recession proof.
Yeah.
I mean, he does good either way. I mean, it's not cyclical. You know, it's kind of steady business the whole time.
It's just got to be comfortable being uncomfortable.
Yeah, you got to be comfortable being uncomfortable. That's right. That's right. Well, hopefully people hear this podcast and they, you know, once we get down, this is episode number 2. Once we get down to episode 10, 15, maybe people finally, you know, grow a pair and start their business.
I mean, every episode is going to be more inspirational and people are going to continue to be more motivated.
I don't know if it can get much more inspirational than the Mac Man here.
I know. It's definitely not going to be as well dressed. I think what we need to do is we need to get whoever's listening, get your kids on this, please. Get them on to Side Hustle Cincinnati so that they can see what guys like Brian are doing how they started out of college.
Kids in grade school got plenty of time to start a little side hustle business.
They do. Yeah. The hard part with us being on Facebook only is that most of the kids are mostly on Snapchat.
We'll get on there eventually. I've been working on it. We're on like, I think, what, like 16 different platforms now.
There's too many networks
now.
These days. Oh. Are you guys TikToking?
I don't even mess with that.
I've never downloaded that.
I feel like a creep getting on TikTok.
Some of my LinkedIn friends are telling me I need a TikTok, that there's just enormous business opportunity there.
Until they kick it out of the country.
When I'm in advertising too.
No, they have Reels. Reels is going to replace TikTok.
I saw that, but
we'll see how that goes.
Opportunities constantly changing on these social networks.
Yeah, I totally feel like a creep on there. Like Snapchat, when that came out, I was like, ooh, I can't get on that, creep, right? And then TikTok, I'm like, ooh, bigger creep, right?
Can
Adam dance?
Oh, yeah.
Look at the guy. Yeah. Of course he can.
He lives in the clubs.
Yeah, 4 days a week. Actually, that's one of the things me and my wife, Melissa, we bonded over was going out and dancing. Because she's a trained dancer. Like her mom was a Rockette.
Oh.
Yeah.
Trained
dancer. Yeah. Sorry, my Hillbonics.
My mother-in-law is also a professional dancer.
Oh, wow. See? Yes. So there's, yeah. And we can dance. Come on, man. White guys.
Very cool.
She's a white lady. Another white lady. Look, there's three people we know that can dance.
Stereotypes are started for a reason. I fall right in that stereotype.
Hey, I went to school and with a bunch of kids from the projects and from different areas, and any stereotype about white people not being able to do something, they told me about it. So that's can't right. jump, can't dance, can't sing.
Guilty as charged on all three.
I mean, I can't dance, but I sure heck have fun doing it.
Hey, you could try. You could do it.
I can dance in this blue suit. I'll bust it out one time.
And if you know anything about Brian, he's down to try almost anything. There, so he's not scared. No, he's not scared.
Maybe one glass of red wine before I get out there.
That's right.
With a bite of Parmesan cheese.
With a bite of Parm.
But this confidence that you have too, I mean, this is probably something that built up. Even with me, I mean, I don't know if I was really an introvert, but I was a little shy when I was younger. And I think the more I built up wins in my life, you know, graduating mm-hmm. high school was a win for me, you know, graduating college was a win for me. You build these wins and I think you build confidence and you're less scared to try things.
Well, I was reading, I was reading something, Elijah's in an English class at Claremont. And so I was reading, cause I'm a dork, just reading some of the stuff he was doing. And one of them was The Right Risk. It was a book. I don't know if I'm imagining it's a book, but he only had the excerpt. And one of the things that the guy was talking about, it was written by a guy who was afraid of heights, became a high diver. And part of what he found was that when you overcome one fear, it's not like a linear step where you're like, okay, this, but it opens up like it's more of a circular, like
you can do anything.
Spherical. Yeah. It may not open up everything, but everything starts getting a little bit less scary.
Yep.
You're like, oh, I overcame the big one. Now I'm not afraid to try this.
You knock down one door, the next door you haven't tried. Oh, well, we're going right through it.
Yeah, and then the fear never goes away. You just learn how to control the fear so that you can be successful at what it is that was scaring you.
Yep. Most things I've been fearful in life, those fears never came to fruition. I think we mentally build up some things like that in us, and until we just push forward, we don't realize that it was never there to begin with.
Yeah, it's not the boogeyman of failure so much as it's the boogeyman of, uncertain failure.
I think that's why people don't start their side hustles. They're scared of failing, but failing should never be looked at as an end-all be-all. I mean, if you can learn from that failure and pivot, whether it was the timing or the product, whatever was going wrong, you could be successful the next month. You know, you might have to fail the first month to figure out it didn't work and try a new model.
Yeah, the only failure is actually stopping. It's because you're not failing, you're learning.
Exactly.
You're learning in a brutal manner, and it's going to hurt. But
fail fast and fail cheap.
Yeah, there you go.
But let's also talk about, it's not just about you, right? This is about people you surround yourself with too. This is about influences in your life. And have you had anyone in your life? I mean, we talked about your parents early kind of saying, hey, maybe this isn't the right thing for you, but I don't think at any point they were negative towards you trying it, right?
No, it wasn't negative. It was just the thought that, you know, you're probably gonna have to go back and get a job.
Have you faced difficult people. I'm sure customers, obviously, in some of the feedback that they gave you, even this may not be people that you're related to. This could be customers that come in and they say, this is the worst company I've ever been around. I hate the product. Like, you guys suck. Like, that could dissuade you from continuing in some cases, especially early on. Like, have you had any, and it doesn't have to be customers, but have you had any like negativity like that that you've had to overcome?
I'd say most of the time, I wish I had a little bit more constructive feedback. Is that most people I ask about the business or the website, and it's, you know, always overwhelmingly positive. I actually want more constructive feedback to make things better. I'm seeking that out.
I'll do it. That'll be my side hustle.
Rip it apart, man.
$50 a month, I will rip you apart.
Woo! Recurring revenue.
I know.
Here we go.
And that's a hell of a deal, because think about how much better your customer service is going to be.
I like it.
Yeah. And then you have a whole team. Have 10,000 people doing that. $50 a month, you'll be doing all right.
There's a lot we can improve on.
I could find a ton of negative people, I'm sure. We attract our own.
That's funny.
Yeah, there's a gray cloud over my old neighborhood. Like, of just negativity.
Well, maybe you made me think of Steve Jobs, because he would deliver very negative comments, but out of context, it could be perceived that way. But he's actually trying to make you so much better. He has to tell you your work sucks so that you make it 10% better. It might already be at 95%. It might be literally world class. But how do you beat world class?
I feel like the harder somebody pushes you, the harder you push back.
Yes.
Well, my dad, I remember in high school, I was getting ridden pretty good. And my dad said, when a coach stops yelling at you, that's when you should worry. I was like,
because you'll never get better.
That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. But then as you get older, you're like, man, he was right. Like, if they're not going to waste their time getting on you if they don't think it's worth getting on you.
If you're tough on your kids, it's because you want them to improve.
Yeah, I want my kids to improve a lot.
Yeah.
Bella, you need to fill those wine bottles up faster. What are you doing, child?
Take those labels off faster.
Take those labels off faster.
Bella, the principal hasn't bought 4 bottles yet this month.
That's funny.
Or she hasn't paid.
Let's we packed up 3 bottles this morning together.
So, you know what the awesome thing is about this?
That's really cool.
So at her age, right, maybe she'll start selling Girl Scout cookies or something. That is working for someone else, because that box of cookies costs, what, like $5 or something. How much of that are you going to get, right? Almost nothing.
A quarter.
But she sells one of those $25 bottles of olive oil. That's all hers to keep, essentially, after expenses, right? Yeah. So this is a perfect example of, hey, Bella, all these other little girls that are selling these cookies, they're not making anything, right? They went and they spent, you know, 200 hours walking door to door, calling their friends and family.
Sitting at the supermarket.
And what did they get? What did they get? A patch? I don't know what they get for that, right? Something a patch like that. And maybe some toys or something. And you made $6,000 in that same amount of time.
I will say, on the business model side of the profit and loss, I am not including the cost to buy these wine bottles. So if you did that, it'd be a negative expense on the business. So, you know, right now our costs are literally just shipping.
She'll figure out a way to get those costs down. Over time, she'll dedicate it.
She'll have people sending her the empty bottles in the future that she wants to resell, and then she'll have zero costs on those.
That's right. So is there anything, you know, you came on the show, you obviously are passionate about side hustles. You're passionate about people in our community and wanting to help, obviously. So what would you want to leave people with? What would you want people to know about side hustles? If I'm riding around in my car, I'm at the house right now and I'm listening to this and I'm excited right now at this point about this stuff, what would you tell people to just kind of push them over the edge and get them to say, I'm going to do it?
Just get started now. There's only a little bit of time to make that small commitment. So just start taking a step, whether it's writing it down on paper and then just taking the next step. It could be literally an hour that makes your brain realize that there's a possibility here. So, I mean, if you have an idea, call someone and try to sell it to them. And then if it works, go make it. Like, don't wait. I think people, it's just this waiting game of, I'll do that when I, you know, retire, or when I have more time in the future. You have time. It's how you prioritize it. Don't watch Netflix at night. Do something with your life. That's where it's at.
What about mentorship?
Mentorship is really key. I actually wish I had way more mentors when I was younger in my business cycle. I have a lot now. I think if you just ask, I mean, people love being mentors. If you have something that I know I can help improve upon, I would love to tell you how to make it better and add more value, because I want everyone to rise up. So find someone in your field. I would say LinkedIn is probably the number one way to go about it. You can find me on LinkedIn with my blue bow tie on. And just reach out to them on there. Send them a very positive message. Tell them why you want to better yourself. And they'll probably give you some great free advice.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think people, don't be afraid to talk to folks that you know that are successful. I mean, I don't know one capitalist who wants other people to be poor. It absolutely makes no sense. It's just not logical, because if people are poor, they can't afford to buy your stuff.
even if you don't have a direct mentor, you can go on and learn. You know, you could just be, you know, reading about someone in your field, you know, their podcast or their book or their, you know, blog, whatever it might be. So I would say, you know, at a super high level person, you're not going to be able to probably get their attention. You're not going to get Gary Vee to, you know, email you back, but you can still go learn from him.
How many books do you read?
Not as much in the last few months, because it's been a little bit crazy being at home with my two girls during this time. I have been using an app called Blinkist, and it's basically every business book condensed down into, you know, 10 to 12 chapters. Each one's about a minute, so you can get through a whole book in 15 minutes.
Oh, yeah, I got one called 12. It's like, yeah, they're thinking so 12
that's
minutes.
That's been awesome. It's basically every key takeaway that you'd expect without having to deal with the whole book.
Do you get the same out of it? Do you feel like you get the same out of it?
For me, I'd say yes, because I actually only want those takeaways. I'm just like waiting to get to that next takeaway. So it's like frustrating in my brain that I had to, you know, read all this crap to get to the next real
thought. There's a lot of fluff in books.
So much fluff.
Have you ever read Tim Ferriss's Tools of the Titans?
I have.
That's an anti-fluff
book. Those are great snippets.
Yes, that's perfect.
Yeah, because each story is only 5 pages, you know.
Yeah, and it's like his most inspirational or his most well-known guests he's had.
Absolutely.
And it's... You know, you go from Gabby Reese, who was, you know, one of the best volleyball players in the world, and she's married to Laird Hamilton, who is the best big wave surfer in the world. And then all of a sudden, you know.
Yeah, Ray Dalio.
Yeah. Or whoever.
Well, I'm reading Principles right now on that 12.
There you go.
Thing, yeah.
Well, they had the one guy that, like, everything was cold. Like, he, like, cold showers. He would go out in the snow and just shorts because he.
Iceman.
Yeah. And, like, just. It's amazing what you find when you just take out the fluff and you just start really getting educated in things that you didn't think you wanted to be educated in.
Tim Ferriss delivers a lot of really good nuggets.
Yeah.
So you mentioned the, what is it, the Sommelier Bible or the Wine Bible?
The Wine Bible.
Wine Bible.
First 300 pages are worth reading.
First 300 pages. What business book that you can think of would you recommend people read?
One of the recent ones I really recommend is called CEO Tools 2.0, and it's a really good operating framework for your business. If you're looking for a kind of a business model to help run your company, there's a couple out there I like. The CEO Tools is a great one. You could read Traction, which is the Entrepreneur Operating System. Those are probably a really great way to get your mindset around how to frame the business, you know, create the 1-year plan, these quarterly follow-ups and these rocks that you focus on, and really kind of, I think it's going to help you focus on your business and, you know, ultimately do a lot better.
And the type of business you run, like, I think people, when they think of becoming an entrepreneur, they think they have to do some kind of like tech startup, right? And, you know, you've got groups out there like Centrifuge, which does an awesome job of facilitating the process of becoming an entrepreneur and growing a startup. They do a great job of that. They provide everything you need at the beginning stages of that and then help you find, you know, investors and things like that. But those businesses are run much differently than what you're doing. And I don't know too many groups out there that focus on businesses like yours, like these side hustle-y type of businesses, right? Like we did software as a service startup, right? Which means, you know, you build a piece of software and you go out and you find a bunch of money so that you could promote it and you can sell it and you can build some traction in the market. But with your business, it's a lot different. This is physical products. This isn't software.
It's inventory.
It's inventory. And a warehouse. But those are some of the hottest businesses right now. I think those are some of the best ones to get into because not everybody is technical. Not everybody understands how to build a SaaS type business. And SaaS means software as a service. But not many people know how to do that. But this is something that you don't need to spend 1,000 hours building a piece of software. You could start this bit by bit.
But we did.
But you did. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, of course.
Behind the scenes is a little bit technical.
Anything is technical now, yeah. Right? Like, I mean,
we've actually combined service and product, which is pretty unique. I mean, it's a service on the front end that we're buying your product, and then it's a product that we're reselling on the back end.
It's awesome. So again,
we didn't even cover all my side hustles, by the way.
Yeah. What is another side hustle? Tell us.
I'm also a wedding officiant doing my next wedding in a month.
Nice.
So it's pretty fun. I like making people happy. And I, you know, that's a great, great time to do that. So.
Multi-faith kind of thing.
I would say it's usually someone that's not that into their faith. You know, I'm not a Christian minister or anything like that. So if you need someone like that, that's not going to be me. But if you're open to having someone that's not face specific, then I would be a perfect person for that.
Man, you could package it all together. You could have the part of the bachelorette party could be the wine tasting and.
Oh my God. Yeah. Package it all together.
So
there you
Cincinnati
go.
Business Courier, when they wrote about me a few years ago, I mentioned a line where I said, I want to marry you underwater and then pair the wines after the wedding. Because I'm a scuba guy as well. So that'd be the ultimate.
Wow. Pac-Man scuba
guy.
So
we take the boat out, then we dive down, we do the wedding, we come back up, and then I'm doing a wine pairing at your
and potentially catering
I could even cook
the dinner.
Yeah, cook it dockside.
So you chart your course on a refurbished Mac, then you use the iPad on the boat to get to that
spot. I like it.
You jump underwater with your scuba gear on. You officiate the wedding, come back up, have some wine and cheese, preferably Parmesan, and then you have the dinner.
This is what happens.
What are we going to charge for the service? I mean, this is going to be amazing.
It's a whole package. I mean, you got wealthy people out there. They'll pay, $100,000 for that?
We cannot do this in the High River, by the way. We got to go somewhere a little more tropical so I can see the people while I'm doing the wedding.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
From my house, you can see the river, and that thing whips. So you would be like, you would start your wedding here, and by the time the wedding's
2 miles down the river,
you'd be in Sparta.
That'd be hilarious.
But this is what happens, people. You start one business. Next thing you know, you're like, let me try this, and then let me try that. And then you start to figure out ways to like tie them all together. And this is what this is. This is what we just came
up with.
Your
side hustles, you don't have to do them all the time. You know, I'm only doing my second wedding ceremony, it can be once a year, no big deal.
I really appreciate your time, man.
This is a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Well, hopefully someone starts a business after hearing this. I mean, it doesn't take any money to do it. Just go start something. Put some of your time and attention to it when you're on nights and weekends. Come on.
Please do that. Please do that, people.
And then reach back to us and tell us what you did so then we can promote you and help you grow.
And find Brian on LinkedIn. Get on there. Brian Burke, B-U-R-K-E. Get on there. Look him up. He's probably, I think you're in a blue suit on your profile picture.
It's hard not to have a blue suit.
Yeah, on all the profile pictures. So if you see a blue suit, it's probably him. But yeah, connect with him on LinkedIn, partysomm.com, S-O-M-M, right?
That's correct.
Partysomm.com.
I think Reverse Out might have made that site.
I think we did, yeah.
Wow, back in the day.
Yeah, way back in the day.
I will drop a promo code if anyone wants to get a discount or a bonus when they're buying and selling their Apple products, use MacMan.
MacMan.
MacMan, one word.
There you go. Promo code. And then sellyourmac.com. And then what was the other address?
Renewedmax.com.
Renewed.
Because we renew them for you.
Max.com. All right, guys. Is there any other domain names? Is there anything else out there?
We could throw a lot out there. This has been really fun, guys.
Well, I appreciate it. Every time I was threatening to keep this thing to an hour, but we're an hour 45. I think we're just...
Good. We're an hour 45 group.
That's what it is.
All right. Motion to adjourn.
Adjourn. Motion.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Right, go start your business.
That's right. Thanks.